It was an uncle of mine who was a missionary priest in Latin America who actually encouraged me to read the works of Dom Helder Camara. And he realized that in the North, I mean, I was involved in the civil rights movement and trying to bring about political and social change. And, of course, many people of my generation were opting for violence. But I increasingly believed I could see how divisive violence was, that it might achieve short-term objectives, but in terms of the gulf that it created between people, long-term, I could see was actually slowing up progress. So I needed to find an alternative, and hence I began to look at Dom Helder Camara.
And what was it in his philosophy that attracted you?
Well, first of all, he wrote a book called The Spiral of Violence, and he talked about there being three levels of violence, but the primary source of violence was the violence of injustice and human rights violations. So he pointed very clearly to structural injustice as a violence. And we tend to think that violence is when people go onto the streets and riot and throw stones or take up armaments and so on. But very often that's in response to structural injustice. And that's the second level of violence. And the third level then, of course, is that, you know, those who have control and who have control also of the police and the army, they will then use them to repress the oppressed. And that was obviously the cyclical kind of spiral. And he always said that if we really want true peace, its foundation has to be justice and peace and human rights. So that was his message. And it was a very simple one, but a very clear one and a very logical one.
And how did he link that with the people in South America when talking about their spirituality and faith and that?
Well, he lived it because, you know, he from a very early age, I think from the age of 4, he'd wanted to become a priest. And he was actually ordained at the age of 22. And then he was a very good organizer, and particularly in terms of the whole educational area in Brazil, and he was actually seconded by the church to the Ministry of Education. And they even wanted to invite him into the Department of Education, although he then became Auxiliary Archbishop of Rio, and eventually then he was brought back to the northeast of Brazil as Archbishop of Olinda and Recife. But by then he had been, in a sense, liberated by the poor himself, because he had been appalled by the conditions that he found in the favelas, the hunger, the destitution, people living in subhuman conditions. And as a consequence, he rejected a lot of the, what I call the church royale. You know, he refused to live as a prince of the church. He changed his golden crucifix for a simple wooden crucifix. He didn't drive, he didn't have a chauffeur, so that if he was going to visit a parish in the diocese of Recife Olinda, very often a parishioner was sent in an old, battered Volkswagen Beetle. And that way he kept kind of his pulse on the beat of humanity in his diocese.
He knew what was going on.
He knew what was going on. He knew about their dreams, their struggles, their worries, and so on. And he had a very simple faith. And he was the nearest I ever came to a living St. Francis of Assisi, because he had this extraordinary mystical communion with creation. I remember when I was in Recife, there is a flying cockroach called the barata, which I detested, and I had a war against them. Every time one scurried across the floor where I was living, I would go and kill it and then nudge it into the corner to make it a feast for the ants that lived there. And then I thought, I wonder what Dom Helder would think about this. So I went to Mass, 6 o'clock Mass the next morning, and I met him afterwards, and I said, Dom Helder, I have a kind of a silly question, but I'd like to ask you, what do you think of the barata? And I remember he loved the question. And I remember this broad smile burst across his face, and he put his hand on my shoulder and he began to tap his chest as though calming his heart. And he just said, when we go to the house of the Father, there will be many important questions. But after 2 or 3 days, then we can ask them about the barata. So that was a lovely lesson in creation theology, you know. And like, no doubt the barata had its place in creation.
Somewhere, but
when he went to heaven, he was going to have a few very important questions about, like, why were people poor, you know? Why did God, you know, allow so much suffering in the world?
Now, he was a great influence, wasn't he? And one of the people he influenced was Archbishop Romero.
he was a huge influence. I mean, it was Dom Helder who created the Conference of Latin American Bishops, where he brought the whole continent together to begin to reflect on the combined challenges that the continent, as a third world continent, were facing, and as a poor southern hemisphere continent, and looking at kind of the structures of injustice that existed in the world, and, you know, condemn people to lives of subhuman conditions. And one of the people, obviously, who would have been very influenced by him would have been Archbishop Romero. And the reason why, of course, Archbishop Romero is probably better known today than the man who influenced him most is because he was obviously assassinated. He became a martyr to the cause. Don Helder himself was often threatened. I mean, shots were fired at his house to try and intimidate him. The Brazilian oligarchy, and after the military junta, he became a non-person. They wouldn't allow him to be quoted in the press.
Mm. So what would you say is his legacy, Dan?
One of his great legacies, I think, is summed up in probably his most famous quotation, which is, "When I give food to the hungry, they call me a saint. But when I ask, why are they hungry, they call me a communist." And it's about structural injustice.